What were the top 10 most read stories on Brewbound this year? Find out on the Brewbound podcast. It is the final episode of the Brewbound podcast for 2021. This is Brewbound managing editor, Jess Infante, joined by my colleagues, Brewbound reporter, Zoe Licata. Zoe, how are you?
I'm good. Excited for the holidays. How about you?
I am good and also excited for the holidays. Is it a bones day or a no bones day?
I think it's a bones day. I went to the tire shop this morning and that was productive. So I guess that classifies as a bones day.
Yeah, dude, that's a total bones day.
Yeah.
I think I'm having a bones day whether I wanted to or not. So here we are. I'm just glad that last week's episode aired. So now we can actually make references to Noodle the Pug. If you don't know what we're talking about, Google Noodle the Pug. You will be charmed and delighted. But yeah, so we are going to keep this short and sweet, but we listened back to last week's episode where we broke down what we thought were the biggest stories of the year in the beer industry with our friends from Beer Marketers Insights, David Simon and Chris Shepherd. But then we looked at which stories on Brewbound got the most page views, and this list was different. So we figured the two of us would get together to discuss, to look back at the year that was, talk through some headlines, get ready to wrap things up and wind things down. The beer industry decidedly does not want to cooperate with my desire for quiet and peaceful last 2 weeks of the year. Zoe, what happened this week?
No, everyone's been very rude with all their news. I mean, not actually rude, but I mean, not respecting our want for a holiday. Yeah, we found out this week through San Diego Beer News at first that Sweetwater was going to acquire Green Flash Brewing and Alpine Beer Company. And that was kind of a surprise to us yesterday. We were just trying to confirm everything. And this seems to be just a continuation of Sweetwater's expansion, trying to become more of a national brand since they've been acquired by Tilray, which is the world's largest global cannabis company. They have been expanding westward, and Tilray has been acquiring several other alcohol companies to expand their own portfolio of beverage brands. So I wouldn't say it's entirely surprising that we found another announcement from them, but it was not expected this week, I don't think.
No, not at all. And I think this kind of puts a punctuation mark in the story of Green Flash, which has had a few ups and downs and, you know, kind of a winding road the past 2 years. At one point, they were growing. They were as large as being the 37th largest craft brewery in the world, according to the BA, which ranks breweries by volume. They were 37 in 2016. By 2018, they were off the list of the top 50 craft brewers by volume. So I don't know. We'll see what this turns into. You know, Zoe, you noted that Craft San Diego Beer News published the story first, and it was kind of like a weird day in reporting yesterday because we saw this story. It had mostly some anonymous sources, and obviously, you know, Green Flash and Alpine are in San Diego, where San Diego Beer News is located. So Brandon obviously has a lot of connections to people, but we couldn't really get anyone to tell us on the record that yes, this deal was happening. We did have quite a few people say like, yes, and you'll be getting an announcement soon. But it was really a little frustrating. So we still have a lot of unanswered questions that we have sent them. We'll see what this means. What San Diego Beer News reported was that they're going to be sunsetting the Green Flash and Alpine breweries in California. And that does make sense. You know, Sweetwater took over a brewery over the summer in Fort Collins, Colorado, that they're going to use to serve their Western markets. So some of those California breweries were duplicative, I guess. But we'll see what happens. And it's just, you know, another really like interesting deal that kind of makes you scratch your head. Like this, you know, Tilray is a Canadian cannabis company, but I think they're looking at the US market where cannabis is not legal right now. And they're just trying to figure out ways to set up a platform that put them in a good position for when, you know, federal legalization comes through.
Yeah, they've been making it known that like they're going to be doing any sort of cannabis related beverages as soon as it is federally legal in the US. And they're putting a lot of stake in that. And even without legalization, they still have a goal of being a $4 billion business in the next 3 years. And even without that legalization, that could be through just CBD beverages and any other acquisitions that they make. But they are going full steam ahead and grabbing lots of people on the way.
So hopefully more details on this story to come. We'll keep you guys posted. Yeah, it's an interesting time to make this deal. And Tilray's publicly traded, so we'll be able to find out more things than, you know, we wouldn't be able to if they were not. But we'll see. Other stories of the week are, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you were hearing from Beer Board? Because I think, unfortunately, a lot of that is about to change with the onset of Omicron.
Yeah. So the report was a little positive. I mean, it was saying that open rates have increased to the highest percentage that they have been for on-premise locations since early June. So it's at 93% right now. That's tied for the highest percentage for all of 2021. Our guess is that that's probably going to go down as we've been seeing all of these COVID increases and some COVID-related regulations for bars and restaurants coming back. So it's a bit of a bittersweet stat to see that, oh, look, we have gotten to this place where places are open, but this is probably not going to stay. Along with that, there were a couple of declines when it came to draft volume and rate of sale in the on-premise. National volume fell 5.8% week over week in this latest period compared to the one before, but it is above 2020 levels. We're going to see if those decreases continue as well with these continued regulations. The number of taps remain the same, so those aren't going down just yet, but those might decline again. And the percentage of taps pouring only declined by 1%, so that's not too much of a decrease. But yeah, it's interesting to see. This might be one of the last like Beer Board reports that we get before another significant decline of everything.
Yeah, for sure. I know we saw that in Boston, Massachusetts. Mayor Michelle Wu recently said that people hoping to dine indoors are going to have to show proof of vaccination, which is something that happened in New York City in August and went into effect in September. And I'm sure we'll see that start popping up in more places as, you know, I just read this morning that Omicron is now the dominant variant of the virus in the States. So we'll see. Great job breaking that information down. You had a pretty thorough report on what's up in the on-premise. So nice work getting that out before the year ends and before COVID changes the game on us for what feels like the 50 millionth time.
Yep.
Let's get into these most read stories on Brewbound. And a few interesting things here to me are that 2021 was our first full year with a paywall up. We moved to a paywall model in September of 2020. And we did take the paywall down for certain stories. And I thought for sure that that would have an effect on what stories were getting the most page views, but that really wasn't the case. We'll note where the stories have been made free, but there's not that many in this list of the top 10. So the number one most read story, probably not surprising if you've been following the craft beer industry in 2021, was the first story that we published, headline being "The Tidal Wave of Sexual Harassment Allegations and Toxicity in Craft Beer Industry Lead to Terminations." And this was made free. It was the first story that we had published in light of all of the information that was coming out and all of the decisions that breweries were making. This is a story that I followed really closely this year. And to give you the TLDR of this is that in mid-May, Brianne Allen, who is the production manager at Notch Brewing in Salem, Mass., posted on her Instagram, "What sexist comments have you heard working, you know, in craft beer, speaking like as a woman who works in beer to the other women who follow her?" And she just used the question function on Instagram stories, and it really opened the floodgates to women from all over the country and all over the world. Thousands of mostly women came forward and shared stories about ways that they've experienced sexual harassment, sexual assault, discrimination, microaggressions, some pretty scary experiences women detailed of sexual assault in various settings. And we covered this and we were at first a little unsure because a lot of women coming forward were anonymous, as is the right to be, but it was a little hard to kind of know what to do. So our way into this story was, we, you know, when breweries started making decisions and posting publicly, you know, about either terminations or resignations or changes to company policy was, we treated that as being the way into the story. And we saw a lot in the early days. There were a lot of resignations of pretty, you know, like high profile, like founders of high profile, very popular breweries like Modern Times and Tired Hands. And this really kicked off what became, I think, will be a sea change in the way that women are treated in this industry. And it's still ongoing. And there's a few other stories later on down the list that are on this topic too. So if it seems like we're not telling you the whole story right now,
plenty of more to come.
Hang tight and we'll get to it.
Yeah.
More to come. So this was in May. We eventually made this story we outside the paywall and then made the decision to keep all stories on the topic of sexual harassment and craft beer in front of the paywall so that everybody can read them. Because I think it's a really important topic that as many people as possible need to hear about.
Yeah.
Zoe, tell us about the second most read story this year.
I mean, it would only be fitting that our second most read story for Brewbound would be related to hard seltzer. And it was the announcement that Molson Coors was ceasing production of its Coors Seltzer brand. So this came out in July. Molson Coors Beverage Company told its wholesalers, no more Coors Seltzer. In a message to the company's wholesalers, the chief marketing officer, Michelle, told, and U.S. sales president, Kevin Doyle, told them, we're ceasing production and please sell all of your remaining inventory. They pointed out that their other hard seltzer brands, such as Vizzy, had been successful. And so they're going to focus on that instead. But I mean, Coors Seltzer hadn't been around very long. It launched in September 2020. Mm-hmm. So it only been around for less than a year at that point. And that was kind of like the correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like one of the first big companies that had come out and said, our hard seltzer is not really working. And so we're going to pull the plug on it, which was kind of, I mean, I guess it makes sense then why it was our number two most read story.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on that. It was, I think, the biggest and highest profile discontinuation of a hard seltzer line we've seen so far. You know, one of the things that the Molson Coors leadership team pointed to was that hard seltzers that are branded with beer brand names are not selling as well as other, you know, standalone brands. So like what that means is to say Corona hard seltzer versus Vizzy hard seltzer. You know, like Corona is the name of the beer brand. Vizzy is a brand that stands alone unto itself. So yeah, they made the call, pulled the plug, but yeah, they do have Vizzy and Topo Chico to lean on. So the Molson Coors hard seltzer portfolio is certainly not wanting. They do have plenty of sales. But speaking of another hard seltzer that launched this year with a lot of noise, and honestly, I don't think we've really heard much about it since, was the Nelk Boys. Zoe, I think this was your story, right?
Yes. So this was technically wasn't our first coverage of the Nelk Boys Happy Dad Hard Seltzer, but it was our first solo story about the brand. So for anyone who may or may not be fortunate enough to not know who the Nelk Boys are, they are a group of Canadian YouTubers who mostly do a lot of prankster style videos. And they launched their old hard seltzer line this year called Happy Dad. Their whole image around the hard seltzer branding is that it is more manly, I guess, of a hard seltzer. They say no slim cans. We're in traditional 12-ounce beer cans. And all of their marketing and everything is a little bit more of that old school, borderline sexist content of lots of women saying suggestive comments and wearing skimpy clothes. So they've taken an interesting marketing approach. And with their launch, they were honestly pretty popular with their own collection of fans. They used to promote videos of fans chasing after distribution trucks and things. And so our number three story was this coverage of them adding distribution in Massachusetts and Rhode Island via Atlantic Beverage Distributors, which was one of their first expansions after their launch. They originally launched in California and then expanded into Nevada, mainly Las Vegas, and then Massachusetts and Rhode Island. And yes, I mean, since then, we haven't really talked too much about them or heard much from them. Just checking out what they're up to lately on Twitter and everything, they seem to be as jazzed and excited about where they're at and what they're doing. They've gotten really into, I don't know if they're officially partnered with it all with UFC, but they do a lot of their promotion talking about UFC. They had over the summer a UFC fighter who won, drank a Happy Dad seltzer out of his shoe as his victory celebration. And it was very popular on the internet.
That's gross.
So yeah, it's definitely an interesting approach to hard seltzer and general alcohol marketing. And honestly, very surprised that they were the number three top story for us.
Yeah, so was I. I mean, their sticking point of having, you know, like regular size cans being their meaningful point of differentiation is interesting to me, because slim can hard seltzers sell literally billions of dollars in inventory. So I don't think that people think it's the problem that they think it is, but I don't know. It's basically hard seltzer flavored with toxic masculinity.
Yes.
I was also shocked that it was this high up in page views, but yeah, our fourth most read story does fall under the same umbrella, the tidal wave of sexual harassment that came to light over the spring and summer. And this was the story about Modern Times founder Jacob McKeon resigning from the CEO role amid allegations of a toxic work environment. And this was probably the most high profile resignation in the early waves of the story breaking in May. But Jacob McKeon, the founder and CEO of Modern Times, resigned from his role after the San Diego craft brewery was named several times as a hostile workplace on a social media account that began sharing the industry's employees' experiences of widespread sexism in the beer industry. I'm obviously just reading the lead from my story here. But yeah, Jacob had posted a statement to the brewery's social media accounts and said, quote, "In order to navigate us out of this extremely difficult moment, we need leadership with the skill and experience to handle it effectively. It's time for a change," end quote. Modern Times still has not announced that they've replaced him. And he also, you know, owned a very significant portion of the company. So they also haven't said whether or not he's been divested. Sounds like I just gave myself a thing to do. So I'll circle back on that. But yeah, definitely one of the biggest moments in the early days of that movement. What is the fifth most read story, Zoe?
So our fifth most read story from earlier in this year was one of Justin's stories, and it was Sonic branded hard seltzer line could make Coop Ale Works a player in the $4 billion segment. This was Justin's coverage of the announcement that in May of this year, Coop Ale Works would be working with the fast food chain Sonic to launch its own hard seltzer line. They have since changed up their line a little bit. They were originally in those Happy Dad style shorted cans and then moved on to slim cans. And they have reformulated a little bit as well. But yeah, when we talked to them earlier this year, President Sean Mossman of Coop Ale Works had said that they definitely want to be a player in this segment, in the hard seltzer segment, and compete with some of the bigger beer guys like Mark Anthony Brands, like Boston Beer Company, try to get more of a craft movement in there.
Yeah, what's interesting about this story is that it really shows a non-alc brand who really wants to dabble in this the beverage alcohol segment. And Sean had told us, you know, early days of this, that before Sonic was even involved, you know, Coop Ale Works is based in Oklahoma City, and so is Sonic. And one of the beloved Sonic soda flavors is Ocean Water. It's bright blue. It tastes a little bit like coconut. So, you know, the Coop team was talking, how can we replicate this flavor in a hard seltzer? So then they started talking to Sonic and they just decided, hey, let's do this thing. And they launched, you know, a co-branded hard seltzer line. And they're not the first and they're not the only. In Massachusetts, you know, Harpoon or Mass Bay Brewing Company, which is the parent company of, you know, Harpoon Brewery, they launched a hard seltzer in partnership with Polar Seltzer, which is a New England brand of regular non-alc seltzers. So Arctic Chill is their co-branded hard seltzer line. There's that. There's Topo Chico, which you already mentioned. Coca-Cola owns the Topo Chico brand, and through a joint venture with Molson Coors, they have Topo Chico hard seltzer. There's also Sunrise hard seltzer, which is a collaboration between the makers of Arizona Iced Tea and Heineken. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of non-alc brands that want to get into the space via hard seltzer. A surprise to me that was not on this list was our story covering Hard Mountain Dew, which came out in August. Boston Beer is partnering with Pepsi to launch Hard Mountain Dew, which should be out next month. So the lines are blurring and shit's getting weird.
Yeah.
Speaking of Boston Beer, the next most read story, so this is number 6, was the announcement of Truly Punch. So headline was Truly Punch on the way in May. Boston Beer sees opportunity as big as lemonade and iced tea. Justin wrote this story when it was announced in March of 2021. Boston Beer Company executives believe Truly Punch could be the next big thing in hard seltzer, rivaling the brand's lemonade and iced tea offshoots. Boston Beer launched Truly Lemonade in January of 2020, just before COVID-19. The Truly Hard Lemonade Seltzer Pack is their best-selling SKU in the Truly family. They launched iced tea in January 2021. And that's like obviously a common time to launch new products because that gets you out in market in time for spring resets at retail. But Truly Punch came really quick after. Truly Punch came out in May. So obviously a little bit off cycle, but they knew they had something and they were not wrong, because now the Truly Punch variety pack is the third best-selling Truly variety pack. Off-premise retail sales have hit $162.3 million through the end of November, according to IRI. Next month, we should be seeing soon the rollout of Truly Margarita style. So yeah, it makes sense. Basically, what we're seeing is everybody thinking of a popular beverage that has the potential to become a hard seltzer. And I think we may not be far off from the day that our friend Dave Infante is calling for, which is hard milk.
No, please no. This feels like so long ago that this story happened, because Truly Punch has been pretty successful since it launched. So yeah, I remember us giving a little bit of crap at the time that like, you're going to be doing so many different kinds of things that may be catering to the same consumer. And like, are you going to be cannibalizing some of your own sales? But it seems to be successful so far. And yeah, we'll see what other innovations are going to come out of trying to cater to that same or similar consumer base, but with always having these newer products and flavors.
Yeah, exactly. I think that Truly, in my opinion, it felt like Truly Iced Tea was a little bit of a stepping stone. Like, they knew they needed to get something to launch in that cycle, but they also knew that they had Punch in the pipeline and ran with it, obviously off cycle. So we'll see what happens. Yeah, Truly Marg is coming. Speaking of non-alcoholic beverages, getting the hard seltzer spin, Bud Light. You just wrote this story, Zoe. Bud Light Seltzer is announcing a soda-inspired pack that's got what, cola, cherry cola, lemon lime.
Yeah, all those like traditional soda flavors is what they're aiming for. And that's going to be a permanent addition. So that's something they're going to have year-round. And then they also added a limited edition sour variety pack. So those are more like, not necessarily like a sour beer, but more like sour candy, I'd say, inspired flavors. But yeah, very interesting that they chose the soda one to be their permanent offering.
Right.
But I think they're trying to play into that same space of the punches, the lemonades, the teas, all that fun stuff.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. For my money, I would have swapped those two and taken sour year-round, but maybe that'll happen. Okay, the number 7 story is actually about beer. Wow, look at that. What a novelty. Yeah, the number 7 story headline is Deschutes Brewery acquires neighboring Boneyard Beer in Bend. Two Oregon breweries linking up. Deschutes, one of the largest craft breweries in the country, made its first ever acquisition in March. They acquired their neighbor, friend and neighbor, Boneyard Beer. Both breweries are headquartered in Bend, Oregon. And the companies described the tie-up as a joint venture. Both brands retain their separate identities. And Boneyard now just gets access to Deschutes' capabilities. That's number 7. Number 8 most read story is another story about the sexual harassment tidal wave that really swept the industry. The headline on this one was "Fallout Continues as Beer Industry Grapples with Accusations of Widespread Sexism and Abuse." And again, this was another story that was in front of our paywall. And this was also pretty early on as everything was happening. But in this story, we detailed that the leaders of Philadelphia-based Evil Genius Beer Company issued a statement on the brewery's Instagram account on Saturday, May 22nd, that acknowledged past mismanagement, outlined the company's next steps to improve its culture, which I know included launching a diversity committee. In the same story, we also mentioned how the staff of Tired Hands Brewing Company, which is based in Ardmore, Pennsylvania, outside of Philly, shared a message via Instagram on Sunday apologizing for, quote, the toxic culture that existed at Tired Hands Brewing Company, end quote. The employees had asked the company's co-founder to step down from leading the company's day-to-day operations. And that was something that was covered in our first story. That was the most read story of this collection. Also rounded into this story was that Chicago area brewery Pollyanna Brewing Company announced the departure of its former president and CEO since learning of numerous allegations regarding him and sexual misconduct. Yeah, those stories just really kind of continued. And the next one is kind of related, but kind of not. If you were following the industry this year, you might remember that in January of 2021, some accounts of a toxic work environment and, you know, the general sweeping under the rug of employees' accusations of discrimination and harassment at Boulevard in Kansas City, that all broke like late January, Zoe, before you joined the team. And these stories were all behind the paywall. We hadn't really learned what we could and couldn't do at the time. So we paywalled these stories, but this was a whole week in which over the weekend, an employee took to a Reddit thread to talk about what she experienced working at Boulevard while pregnant and basically, you know, said that they were inhospitable to her while she was carrying a child. She had since left the company, but she made reference to another coworker at the time who she knew, who actually spoke with us on record. That coworker was sexually assaulted by another coworker of hers offsite, you know, during non-working hours, and went to the police about it. And the police, you know, obviously took her claim and told her to, they recommended that she file a restraining order against him. But when she went to, you know, HR at work about this, they said, well, you would only hurt him. We'll just make sure that you guys stay apart. And as all of this information came out over the course of several days, Boulevard had several executives step down. Several people were fired. Some people quit. Their founder, John McDonald, came back out of retirement to lead the company. And it was a pretty tumultuous week there. But this story that is coming in at number 9 was the first story that we wrote in a series of several, obviously, as news just kept breaking that week. It was interesting to me that there were several months in between the reckoning that was coming. And I think that was just kind of the beginning. And it really got people talking about women's experiences working in craft beer. And it was really one of the first times that I remember that we really had these conversations, having been in and around the industry for over 10 years.
Yeah. It's a little bit encouraging, I guess, to see so many of these like related stories in our top 10, because I feel like sometimes when we're talking about this and reporting about it all the time, you can feel like you're just kind of shouting into a void sometimes. And you question if, are people really paying attention? And is this going to be something that has actual change? Or is it going to be something that we talk about for a little bit and then kind of gets swept under the rug again? Because it's happened before. But seeing that, I mean, there's so many in our top 10 that people are paying attention and they want to know what's happening and they're reading about things that are happening as a consequence of what's happening. And so it's a little bit of, I guess, an encouragement that there is stuff in the industry that is changing. And it's not so great that we have to be reporting these things because you want them to be not happening in the first place, but to see that at least some sort of consequence is going to happen is good.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you just said, you know, it's heartening to know that people are reading these stories, because the thing that I just keep coming back to on this topic is that craft beer, in order to grow, is really going to need a bigger tent. And it's hard to bring new people into that tent when there's such systemic mistreatment of half the population. I'm glad that we're seeing industry groups really take an interest in getting this right and fixing conditions, because it's important, you know, it's important for women to know that they'll be safe at work. And it's important, for everybody to know that they work in safe environments that aren't toxic and, you know, where people are respected, not just as employees, but as human beings. And, you know, we've seen a lot of efforts come forth this year through, you know, trade organizations that are interested in helping a lot of breweries set up the proper protocols. We've seen the Brave Noise Beer Project encourage the creation of codes of conduct. I think the reason that this story was so big this year and these stories of abuse and mistreatment were so widespread is that so many of these companies are very, very tiny. They don't have formal HR departments. And a lot of times they're founded by friends and they hire their friends and they turn into these collegial and laid back work environments, which is fine, but there's also the potential for things to go wrong. And if you don't have the guardrails to keep everybody in check, things can go wrong very quickly, particularly in an industry like this one where we make alcohol. And that, I think, has certainly what led to a lot of the stories coming out of like things like festivals and events like that.
Yeah.
There's just so much consumption.
I'm going to be interested to see next year if we're going to see similar stories in our top 10. I mean, hopefully there'll be more of stories around things that are changing or things that people are adopting, but more along the lines of, are people still going to be talking about it next year? Is it still going to be something that everyone is focused on next year? Or is it going to get deprioritized a bit?
Great question. We'll wait to see. And with that, the 10th story of the year, which kind of surprised me given by how recent it was, is, Zoe, why don't you tell us about this one?
Yeah, definitely more recent big news was the coverage of Ball increasing its minimum of printed cans to over 1 million cans per SKU. So that's been something we've been talking about a lot recently. I mean, Ball, it's the world's largest manufacturer of aluminum beverage cans. And they basically told customers, you have until January before these minimum changes happen. We can't provide warehousing for you anymore. You have to have 5 truckloads worth of cans per SKU. They also are going to have some pricing increases as well. So this kind of shook a lot of people. It wasn't something from conversations that we've had with breweries and other can-related companies. It wasn't necessarily a surprise that something like this happened, but it was a bit shocking that change was going to happen so quickly and that so many people are going to be impacted by it. So we've had numerous stories since then. And yeah, it's something that is going to definitely impact the next year and more of beer.
Yeah, for sure. So to put this into context, and I know we've talked about this on this podcast before, so you probably heard this, but if you haven't, the minimum order for Ball previously was 1 truckload, which is about 200,000 cans. It's about 8,500 cases. This is for printed cans per SKU. And this was only applied to their non-contract customers. So customers with contracts, I'm sure, had a different situation. But that number went from, as Zoe said, 1 truckload to 5 truckloads, which is about 1 million cans. And that number of 12-ounce cans would hold roughly 3,084 barrels of beer. That's more than the vast majority of craft brewers produce in a year. And a lot of smaller providers are too small to order from Ball to begin with. So they're ordering from can brokers. And that's who Ball suggested these, you know, these former smaller customers turn to is can brokers who can, their options here are going to be to either shrink sleeve these cans in plastic or label them. All of that cuts into the margins. That also makes the cans less recyclable. So there's a few different impacts here. And I really think this is going to change a lot of how breweries need to operate, or we'll see what it does to pricing, but huge, huge story that snuck in about the week before Thanksgiving, all going into effect January 1st.
Definitely not the last time we're going to be talking about it. Fortunately, there are people who are kind of working in the pursuit of helping craft breweries and trying to provide solutions for them. We did a story on it the other day where I talked to people from leaders from American Canning, from Wild Pack Beverages, and from DWS Printing. And they're all saying, hey, we specifically really want to help these smaller to mid-sized breweries that need us right now. So I think it's going to impact several different parts of graph is going to impact innovation. I think people might be cutting back on how many new things they're going to be coming out with. It's going to cause price increases across the board, and it's going to may also have environmental impact. So there's lots of different factors of things that are going to change as a result of it. So it's not surprised that it's a very popular story, though, again, it's very recent. So kind of crazy that it made into the top 10 for the whole year.
Yeah. And on top of that, in the top of the, you know, the increase in minimum order quantities, we've also seen some price sheets from Ball that show the price of cans for customers that are still able to get them is going up. Well, so that 2021, God, what a year.
What a year.
What a year. Zoe, what are you doing for New Year's Eve? What are you doing to watch this year die?
I don't know. Hanging out in my bedroom, watching a movie. New Year's Eve is not really a big thing for me. It stresses me out. If there's normally crowds before COVID, that stressed me out. Now we have all this new COVID stuff. I'll be probably drinking some of the numerous beers that are in my fridge and trying to forget some of the craziness of this year and look forward to next year. How about you?
Oh, I'm with you. I do not like going out for New Year's Eve. I used to like it when I was like your age, but you know, the world was different. COVID didn't exist. And there also were bars near where I am right now. I'm, you know, home at the Jersey Shore for the holidays, and some of the bars down here, because the winter is the off season for them, they would have like these crazy deals where you'd buy a ticket for like $20 or $30 for open bar with like pastor hors d'oeuvres and like a fun cover band. So like we did that quite a lot, but the older I get, the less likely I am to one, be able to make it to midnight, and two, like have any desire to go anywhere that's not my couch and wear anything that's not sweatpants.
Yeah. Well, I should also note for anyone who isn't familiar with Boston's New Year's situation, you can't really get into any bar anywhere in Boston unless you buy a New Year's Eve ticket beforehand. And prices this year are minimum $60-something just to get in. And their benefits are, oh, you can have a free glass of champagne.
Oh, cool. If I recall correctly, Boston does shoot off fireworks over the harbor, which is should be able to see from your new place, which is exciting.
That is true. Wow. I didn't even think about that. Yes. Okay. That will be my New Year's Eve plan then. I will go watch the harbor fireworks. That sounds lovely.
Enjoy that. I love fireworks. They're one of my favorite things. Cool. Well, 2021, geez, GTFO 2021. You were not all that kind to any of us. That's our show. It's our last show of the year. So thank you so much for tuning in. I've had a great time enjoying doing the podcast this year. I think it's one of my absolute favorite things about our job. So thank you for joining me. And thank you all for listening. Thank you to Justin, who's really been the captain of the ship all year, to Joe, our one-man audio superhero who makes this all sound palatable to the ear. And yeah, like this has been awesome. So let us know what you guys want to see coming up in the future. Shoot emails to podcast@brewbound.com. Like, rate, review on all of the applicable podcast platforms where that happens. But yeah, but stay tuned for more in the new year. Hope 2022 is calmer, kinder. I don't know, but may you watch 2021 fade into the recesses with a beverage of choice in your hand and in a setting where you feel most comfortable. If that's a big party, cool. Have at it. Have fun. I will be on the couch. Cheers to 2022.